welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Respiratory. This podcast aims to bring you expert perspectives from a multidisciplinary team on the current and emerging second-line treatment options for patients with extensive-stage small cell lung cancer. Specialists in the MDT involved in caring for patients with small cell lung cancer discuss individual patient cases to highlight current and emerging approaches to treatment, how treatment options are tailored to each individual patient, and how patient outcomes can be optimized through improved adverse event management in the second-line treatment setting. This activity is funded by an independent medical education grant from Jazz Pharmaceuticals and is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME. In this podcast, a medical oncologist, an oncology nurse practitioner, and an oncology pharmacist discuss the management strategies for patients with relapsed small cell lung cancer experiencing treatment side effects and consider how to balance clinical effectiveness with patient quality of life.
Hello, my name is Barbara Molaski. I'm a medical oncologist that treats only thoracic malignancies. And today we're going to be talking about small cell lung carcinoma and really optimizing outcomes by improving adverse event management. And I'm happy to be joined by Dr. Victoria Sherry, who's an oncologist nurse practitioner at the Aberson Cancer Center in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, and also Dr. Sonia Min-Thomas, a clinical oncology specialist pharmacist at the WellStar North Fulton Hospital in Northwest Georgia Oncology Center in Waswell, Georgia, USA. And again, welcome you both. I'm going to ask Dr. Victoria Sherry to present a case.
Thank you, Dr. Molaski. Welcome, Dr. Thomas. So for this case study, we have a 61-year-old male with a remote smoking history, approximately 5 pack years. He quit about 30 years ago. He was in a motor vehicle accident where he was hit from behind and he experienced significant back pain from the impact. He was followed by physical therapy. However, his back pain persisted. And so his primary care provider ordered an MRI of the thoracic and lumbar spine, which showed bone lesions in the lumbar spine and pelvis. He was sent for a CAT scan of the chest, which showed a right upper lobe lung mass. He was seen by pulmonary. He performed a bronchoscopy, which revealed small cell lung cancer. He received palliative radiation to his pelvis for pain control and was started on carboplatin, etoposide, atezolizumab. You see that for 6 cycles, he did well. He went on to receive maintenance atezolizumab. However, a surveillance CAT scan, chest abdomen, and pelvis 4 months later showed progression in his liver. At that point, he was started on lurbinectedin and underwent RFA to his liver lesion. So he comes back into the clinic 3 weeks later after his first cycle of lurbinectedin with complaints of fatigue, nausea, and constipation.
Yeah, I think that's a great case, mostly because it's so, it's sort of what we see a lot of the times. You know, if you think of the two checkpoint inhibitor trials, both Caspian and the IMpower 133, most patients did progress by that 4 month time. And lurbinectedin is probably the easiest of our second line choices, but as your patient, there can be some marrow toxicities. So, I'm going to ask Sonia, what strategies do you think should be done to manage this patient's sort of fever or neutropenia?
Yeah, so great question. You know, these are very typical toxicities that we see, very common to have them. And, you know, for the fever, of course, just monitoring at that point and seeing if there are any sources of infection, and that would sort of be our line to see if we should, you know, treat that inpatient or outpatient. But I think this patient was also complaining more of like the fatigue and nausea and constipation. And I would say, you know, fatigue is definitely number one. It's the main side effect we hear. I know there are some trials out there that kind of looked at fatigue where they mentioned really, I know it's counterintuitive, but walking 10 to 20 minutes a day is really kind of the best for fatigue. So we do recommend patients to walk. We recommend hydration. And not, you know, I think a lot of the patients want to drink like these sort of sports drinks with like, or like B vitamin waters and that sort of stuff. And, yes. You know, I usually tell them it's okay in moderation, but I usually tell them to really just stick to water because sometimes I don't know how much they're drinking and how much it will impact, you know, electrolytes and other things. So that's typically what I usually tell them. I know with Lubridectadin in the basket trial that they had originally done, I know they looked at some of these side effects where they would decrease the dose on the next round by 12 to 16%. And that fine line of the 12 to 16% is what they found could, you know, really help with like efficacy and helping with decreasing side effects. So sometimes we'll play with that as well as the dose reduction for the next time around.
Yeah, I think all of those are great. I chuckled a bit when you said walking because I just yesterday I had a conversation with one of my patients and I told them that the hardest day to get out of bed is a Monday because you sleep all day Sunday. So, you know, I think patients and even non-patients, they think that exercise is going to decrease their energy where it actually has been shown to increase it. So I thought your walking it was a great sort of tip for patients to actually get some exercise and get rid of their fatigue.
In addition, you know, I ask my patients, they can take a cat nap, I say, but I usually don't let them go for more than 1 hour. And I do. As Sonia said, it seems counterintuitive to ask them to exercise, but I do ask, even if it's walking down to their mailbox or walking around the house or doing some form of mild exercise. In severe cases of fatigue, I will add dexamethasone daily, low dose. I don't know if either of you do that in your practice, but I usually reserve that for severe cases.
Yeah, I think it's important if you use steroids for improving fatigue that you make sure that there's a limit. You know, often I see patients who are on steroids for months. Sometimes it's being put on them by the palliative care people, and you know they live longer than the time period. And then suffer the side effects of long-term steroids. So, but I agree. I think short courses of steroids can really be helpful. Now, do either of you use G-CSF for marrow toxicity of any of these drugs?
Yes, I was going to add that in for this patient who has a white blood count of 2,000, ANC of 700. We support all of our patients with pegfilgrastim. And then also I tell my patients to take loratadine 10 milligrams a day for several days afterwards, just to mitigate some of that bone pain, hopefully.
Interesting.
Yes.
I was on call on the weekend and a patient on G-CSF had severe back pain and, you know, didn't want to take her next dose. And it was a bit challenging. So, but that's a great helpful hint.
Yes, and sort of to echo what Dr. Sherry was saying is same here. We'll tell them even beforehand to the morning of to take loratadine and sometimes in conjunction with acetaminophen. And then another thing we'll also for, I don't know, for you guys, for the pegfilgrastim, we're using the Onpro, the auto body injector. I'm sure that's what you guys are all using, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a, you know, if you look at NCCN guidelines and you're talking of looking at small cell lung cancer, there's a long list of choices. They all have some myelosuppression to them. I would say from my own experience, topotecan has the most thrombocytopenia. Lubricant seems to be, I think, the best in terms of the side effect profile. I do come from, again, many years of practice. And so I have used irinotecan and it may be well tolerated, but I'm not sure there's a lot of activity in it. And again, there's hair loss with many of these agents, including the regimen CAV, the adriamycin, you know, and etoposide, of course, hair loss. So I think they all have some myelosuppression that we have to look out for it. They all have some nausea and vomiting that we have to try to prevent. And of course, make sure that if the patient's of reproductive age, that birth control is being used. So, Dr. Sherry, you know, these are patients, unfortunately, it's palliative, which means we're not going to cure them and we're giving them many of these therapeutics have side effects. And so how do you, before you start a therapy, of course it's dependent on the therapy you're starting, but what do you sort of warn the patient so that there's no surprises to them?
So I think with a lot of these side effects, as you're going through, I try to focus on being proactive rather than reactive. So we know that they're going to experience, neutropenia. We know that they'll probably experience constipation. And I say, really, however you tolerate your first cycle, you're likely to tolerate it's similarly the following cycle. So let's go, like, it's really the second cycle is very important to me because I'll look back at the first cycle, see how they tolerated it and make any tweaks and adjustments according to that. And also I think, like you said, this is not curable, but treatable, bringing in palliative care very early on. At diagnosis, bringing them into the picture, helping them co-manage everything.
Oh, that's a great idea. I forgot to mention that. And lots of great studies to show that early palliative care referrals can really make a world of difference for patients and their caregivers. Sonia, do you have anything to add to this?
Yes, we always emphasize this, and it's really difficult sometimes for these patients, but really, myself, the pharmacists at our facility, we really actually work with them closely with nutrition and the importance of what they're eating, because we've noticed the patients who are staying healthy throughout the treatment have a lot of support from family. Of course, they do a lot better. And there are studies to kind of show this as well for survival. And so we actually do a lot of education counseling beforehand. Before they start these treatments, we're spending about an hour and a half to 2 hours with them, going through and really digging into their lifestyle to figure out how best to help them instead of just kind of counseling them on the side effects. We kind of look at their diet and help with modifications. And I've noticed that that's really helped, that one-on-one touch. And then coming back, I'll usually go back every time they're there for a cycle and follow up with them and do a session in the infusion center. And I think that kind of one-on-one interaction, I know my oncologist doesn't have the resources or the time to really sit there and spend as much time sometimes with the patient. So I think that kind of interaction has really helped with some of the side effects. And just like Dr. Sherry mentioned, just being aware of the side effects and what to do when they actually happen.
Mm-hmm. Sonia, yeah, to piggyback off of that, I tell my patients that if they have a side effect, I can typically prescribe a medication for it. But what I can't do for them is exercise, eat, or drink. So I always put that onus on them. And I think we've talked about, the importance of hydration and exercise and nutrition in this discussion.
No, that's excellent. I think I think both of you are so valuable to managing patients as they go through this journey and to keep them on therapy because, again, if they respond, not only will their quality of life get better, but they'll live longer. And that's most, patients want that. So you have to have an open discussion. And I think you're right. I think if you can talk to them about what they might be going to expect or might get in terms of a side effect profile, they're probably much more willing to, deal with it and continue therapy. So I wanted to thank you both for your insight and hard work and value to patients with extensive stage small cell.
Thank you. This has been a great discussion.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic at www.touchrespiratory.com. Don't forget there are two other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.